sent through just to burn. The blue rectangles are where we harvested, and it wasn't a clear cut, but it was a reduction down to 50% crown closure, so some trees were left on the site. And the purple boxes are where we did the harvest and then the burn following the harvest, so both those treatments together. And just to help you visualize this a little bit, this is what the controls look like. This was the harvest only. This was the burn only, and you can see the orange undergrowth from the fire. And this is the burn and harvest, and you can see there's still some of the downed wood from the harvest. And this is when it was still smoking, so this is just a few hours after the burn. And this is that same area a few weeks later when it had started to green up quite a bit. The data that we collected on these 10th acre plots, with each tree was tagged, and we looked at the species, the diameter, breast height, the tree height, the height to first live crown, and the height to continuous live crown, so the continuous canopy, tree health, and also scorch height as a possible measure of fire intensity. So this is an entomology meeting. Here's our bug. This is Dendroctonus valens, the red turpentine beetle. And it's a very interesting insect because in the pre-treatment data collection, we didn't see this bug hardly at all. I think there was one instance where we saw this insect. And then it came into the site only after the treatments had been applied. This insect has a 1 to 2 year life cycle in this climate, and it goes into the live trees and to the stumps. And you'll find it at the very base of the tree or the stump. And the way you can spot it is this white blob here. That's a pitch tube where the tree has actually tried to physically pitch the insect out. So this is another picture of, it's kind of a mix of the frass and also the pitch, and it kind of looks like popcorn. And that's on a scorched tree. See right in the, there we go, right yonder. And this is in a stump, and you can see it infest right at the base of the stumps. So in looking at this data, we used our 1/10 acre plots again and looked at all the live trees and assessed if there was an active infestation by this insect based on whether we saw the pitch tubes or not. And we also looked at all the stumps within the 1/10 acre plots. And in 2006, what we found was that the control areas, again, had no red turpentine beetle at all. The harvest only and the burn only areas had lower proportion of live trees that were infested. But there was a significantly higher amount of trees infested with red turpentine beetle where the burn and harvest treatments have been applied together. And then 2007, this past fall when we went back, what we found was that the burn only had kind of caught up, and we had a comparable proportion of live trees infested in the burn and harvest and the burn only areas. But still the controls had no red turpentine beetle in them, and the harvest only had a very low proportion of standing live trees that were infested. And looking at the stumps, now this compares between the 2 years and there were only two treatment areas that had stumps, the harvest only and the burn and harvest. And we see is there hasn't been a change in the 2 years. They are comparable in 2 years and about the same proportion of stumps infested in these two treatment types. So in summary of what this data is showing us is that with red turpentine beetle in the live trees, it's related to fire. It was only in the treatment areas where we had burned that we saw this insect coming in significantly. However, with the stumps, this appears to occur independently of fire. And when you see red turpentine beetle, that doesn't mean it's a death sentence for this tree. The trees can resist these attacks. However, a matter of concern is the possibility of other insects coming in, like the Ips pinei, which would attack the weakened trees and might result in more mortality in the stand. And these populations could build up over time. So that's something that remains to be seen. And as a little side note, some other data that we're still looking at from this site includes pitfall trapping to assess the biodiversity of ground-dwelling arthropods, understory herbaceous vegetation surveys, seedling and sapling, and as I said earlier, because fire can impact the regeneration of seedlings on the site, spore trapping, and also sentinel red pine seedlings to look at shoot blight diseases like Spirochetus and Sciroccus, which can be a concern in some of these sites. All right. And what we're hoping that this data can result in is help forest managers to have an idea of what to expect if they're using prescribed fire, and also in the case of wildfire. And this is a picture of my site when it was actually burning. And cue the Sleeper Lakes fire, which happened in August of 2007, just a few miles from this site. A 19,000-acre wildfire is actually the third largest fire in Michigan's history. So hopefully the data that we're collecting will help forest managers know what to expect in the case of a large wildfire like this one. And it'll be really interesting to see how that all pans out. So I thank you very much for your attention. I would love to take questions and hear my acknowledgments also. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Once the trees were attacked by the red turpentine beetle, was it shown that once they were attacked that more beetles came to the tree?
Well, and the question is, did more beetles come to the tree after an attack?
Was there an aggregation pheromone?
It's thought that there is no aggregation pheromone. It's actually like the resin from the tree that's attracting these insects. So, uh-oh, what do you got?
A vertically transmitted fungal symbiont that is implicated in
okay.
The smell of that attracts other beetles.
Okay, it's not a pheromone, but it's from the fungus.
It's
okay.
Fungus.
That's
and as, like,
so interesting.
We saw in somebody else's talk. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
The fungus
moved that's great. Thank you very much. Does that help?
And to get at this question, we assembled a community of 8 species. We have at the bottom of the food chain here a collard plant, Brassica oleracea, fed upon by 2 herbivores, the diamondback moth and a green peach aphid. The enemy pool feeding upon these herbivores, we've got 5 species, an adult parasitoid, Diadegma insulare, a larval green lacewing, an adult convergent lady beetle, an adult nabid, and an adult big-eyed bug. This particular enemy assemblage, or this particular enemy pool, was chosen because it's exceedingly common in collard fields in eastern Washington. Here you can see that these enemies are indeed lethal to the herbivore. You can see a caterpillar sucked dry by this green lacewing larva. And down here we have a nabid who has finished off the caterpillar and is moving on to the aphids. The enemies also have non-lethal interactions with the prey. Here is a characteristic anti-predator prey behavior of the caterpillar diamondback moth, the larval diamondback moth. It has dropped down on a silk attached to the underside of the leaf, and it does so when the predation threat becomes too much to bear. And over here you can see the convergent lady beetle. That was the predation threat, and it had been cruising around the leaf edge on this leaf. Alright, so one of our main objectives here is to isolate the effect of diversity per se. And the way we do this is by replicating a given level of species richness rather than any one particular species composition. So here you can see enemy assemblages, each having 4 individuals, but represented by just 1 species. And on the right, we have enemy assemblages, again with 4 individuals, but now represented by 4 species. So we have 5 unique replications of high species richness and 5 unique replications of low species richness. And this allows us to test for the effect of diversity per se. Our second objective is to isolate the lethal and non-lethal components of the total enemy effect. All right. So I want you to focus on this 2x2 here. We have the lethal component of the enemies, present, absent, crossed with the non-lethal component, present, absent. So this 2x2 shows the 2 factors, lethality crossed with fear, but we have a third factor, which is the diversity factor. And so this 2x2 is embedded within monocultures and within the polycultures, and this gives us our factorial structure for the experiment. Right, so specifically, how did we create this fear alone treatment? We start with that we have enemies present within the cage, but we replace prey that are killed by those enemies, thereby eliminating the lethal component of the enemy effect, leaving just the fear component. The lethality alone treatments are created by having no enemies within the cage, but I manually remove prey corresponding to density reductions in the lethality plus fear cages. So there is no fear, just density reductions. A third objective is to measure the direct and indirect effects of these enemies. So here we have a sample enemy assemblage. It scares and kills the prey. So we measured the number of anti-predator prey behaviors. I refer to them as displacements. And we measure prey density. Now, if the particular interaction, the predator-prey interaction, changes the way these herbivores interact with the plant, then the enemies effectively have an indirect interaction with the plant, and we measure that relationship in terms of final plant biomass. So this work was done in field cages in eastern Washington. Our three factors give us a 2x2x2, thus 8 treatments, and with the 5 replications, we have 40 cages. Each cage was populated with 2 collared plants, 20 caterpillars, and about 50 aphids. The cages receiving enemies had 4 enemies per cage, and the trial lasted for 4 days. I'll get right into the data. First, I want to mention that this experiment was done twice, so we have a temporal blocking factor which introduces this trial main effect, which gives us a 2x2x2x2, and forgive me for the somewhat obscene ANOVA table here, but I need to point out several key interaction terms. So remember that we're now looking at our response variable is plant biomass. So we're looking at the effect of enemies on plants.